So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Joining me from New York is Rafat Ali. How are things going there?
Things are great. I'm back in New York. From last week I was in Boston. And it's been great fall weather. Finally it's coming together. All the leaves have already are turning, and probably this weekend is going to be the peak fall season here.
Yeah, and I have a trip planned to New York, so it'll be good to be there and not was going to be a business trip, but now it's more of just a vacation. So it'll be interesting to actually be there and not have work obligations.
Yeah, no, it's going to be gorgeous this weekend.
So this week we're going to talk a lot about last week at the end of the week, Groupon finally had its IPO, the social couponing pioneer, and you know did pretty well in its IPO. And I guess the question that we'll look at is, you know, what does that mean for other IPOs in the pipeline? What does it mean about, you know, social couponing and that whole field? You know, what's the long-term prospects for Groupon? I'm curious, do you use any of these kind of couponing services yourself, Rafat?
I don't. I subscribed to, I think, Groupon for New York early on. And then when the coupons became a lot more about spas and that kind of stuff, it wasn't particularly to my taste. It feels like it's a lot of that is aimed at people in their 20s for some reason, or at least women in their 20s, just not to males in their late 30s. I had Living Social, which seemed to have a slightly more curated filter on deals, but at the end of the day, I guess I'm not part of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I've subscribed to all of them, I feel like, at one point, or either, you know, got them as gifts from other people, or I've seen, you know, Living Social, I'm subscribed to the Facebook deals when they had those. So I've seen a lot of them, and I've subscribed to them, but it seems like you can get overwhelmed pretty quickly. And this idea that you pay out the money before you go to do something, I know a lot of people were kind of upset because they spent money for something and they never really used it in time, and didn't really get to take advantage of what the offer was. It just seems like there's a lot of burnout or just people getting tired of these deals. Like, it started out as a really exciting thing and then got kind of – people seem to have got burned out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think the novelty value is over to a large extent in that. And even for the businesses – and our guests probably will talk a lot more about that – even for the businesses, it's overwhelmed them in many different ways, without the returns that they're hoping. Of course, it's made a lot of traditional companies in the space sit up, including the media companies that you and I deal with and talk about and cover. And it was a space that was supposed to have been pioneered by them, and then they sort of lost the way, it seemed like, but maybe they haven't. Maybe they're the ones that are going to claw back as people get tired of third party brands.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you would think that if anyone knows their local business, you know, their local community, it should be the local media organizations, but maybe they've just lost such touch with them and lost some of these kind of local business advertisers to people like Google and Yahoo and other kind of local online, you know, publishers, that it's been hard for them to kind of grab onto this.
Yes, and I'm looking at the Groupon stock chart, by the way, today.
It's gone down a little bit from what it was, right?
It has. I mean, yeah, it's gone down from last week for sure. Come down quite a bit, right around their opening price, $20 price.
We'll talk about Groupon. We'll also talk about some of the other possible companies that are thinking about IPOing, going public. You know, is this a time for IPOs, or are the markets still not quite back to where they once were? And also, we'll talk a little bit about Barnes & Noble announced that they've got a Nook tablet coming out that will take on the Kindle Fire and the iPad, and we'll just talk a little bit about that and what its prospects are. first, let's start talking about the Groupon IPO. Groupon last Friday priced its IPO at $20 a share. It's quickly rose to $30 and is now trading closer to the $20. It's already come back kind of down to earth a little bit. But for a while, it was valued near $20 billion. Now it's closer to about $12 billion. They used a small float, meaning they didn't sell a huge portion of the company. They've also been kind of controversial in that they used accounting technique that the SEC didn't like and had to kind of change their accounting. They lost a couple COOs, and there was a big expose in Business Insider by Nicholas Carlson on just the inside story of what happened at Groupon. The question is, there are others that are possibly in the pipeline. Zynga might do an IPO later this year. Yelp, now there's rumors that they might file for an IPO. And of course, we're all waiting to see if Facebook has an IPO. And the question is, you know, are we back to kind of a bubble time with startups? Or is this just, you know, a kind of an anomaly that Groupon has done as well as they have? So let's add to the conversation our guests. So Inez Kabani is an analyst for Yipit Data, which provides past offer detail and competitive intelligence to the daily deal industry and investors. Yipit aggregates and recommends the best daily deals based on where you are and what you like. Currently collects daily deals from over 400 services, including Groupon, Living Social, and many more. Welcome, Inez.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Henry Blodgett is CEO and editor-in-chief at Business Insider. He's a former top-ranked Wall Street analyst and also the host of Yahoo Tech Ticker, a Yahoo Finance video show viewed by 7 million people each month. He's often a guest on Bloomberg, CNN, MSNBC, and other networks. He's the author of the Wall Street Self-Defense Manual, A Consumer's Guide to Investing. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about first the Groupon IPO, which happened last Friday. I'm curious, what do you guys think about it? I mean, Henry, you ran a couple stories. One saying, you know, congratulations, Groupon, you guys have done a great job. You know, you've helped pioneer this new sector. And then in your next piece, you kind of said, you know, I wouldn't put my money in your stock. So do you feel like a little conflicted about what Groupon's offering?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that the key point there is that stocks and companies are two completely separate things, and they often behave very differently than each other. So the point that I was making is Groupon, after having a two-year period where everyone was saying how great they were, has now gone through about 6 months of unbelievable backlash, with it just being so cool to trash them all the time and talk about how they're going to zero and it's a Ponzi scheme. And so my congratulations was to say, look, you know, you have accomplished an extraordinary amount in 3 years, and you should be proud. And if the IPO goes out at $10 billion or $15 billion, wow. What an accomplishment to get there. Now, for the stock, the reason that I think the stock is something that I would stay away from, and certainly at the $30 price point, but I'm not even at this price point, is I think that Groupon is going through a transition period where they're going from hyper growth to much more controlled growth and profitability. And in the past, in my experience, that transition is often very tough for companies to go through smoothly. And it's often very rough on stock prices. But long term, I do think Groupon has identified a new business. I think they're the leader in that business. And I think it could be a huge business long term. So I'm not negative on the company at all over the long term.
What do you think, Inez? What's your take on Groupon? You obviously work with them.
I kind of agree a little bit with Henry. You know, they created basically a $3 billion industry that didn't exist 2-3 years ago. They figured out this, you know, very simple model where if you send an email a day, and if, you know, that contains quality information, customers will be really interested. And now, because they've built such a critical base of customers and merchants, they have a lot of room to better monetize that base. So, you know, there's tons of opportunities they're working on. You know, they can introduce new products, and that's what they've been doing. You know, there's this whole shift to mobile, local, and, you know, they really haven't figured that out yet, but someone will in 3 to 5 years, and they're not really in a horrible position to own that space.
Do you think, I mean, we were talking earlier about we're a little bit overwhelmed with daily deals. I mean, we started with Groupon, then we started getting Living Social, and you know, you're kind of aggregating a whole bunch more. It feels like there's just so many. Is there kind of a burnout going on in daily deals? Do you think that, you know, people are just getting tired or just overwhelmed with them?
So, you know, that's kind of one of the problems that Yipit was actually created to solve, to kind of make it easier for the customer to find what they really wanted. But, you know, early on, we saw daily deals popping up every day. You know, historically, there have been, you know, over 700 of them. But now you're kind of seeing the major players sift out from all of that. You know, you have Groupon, you have Living Social, but the other big ones, Travelzoo, Guild City. And now you have, you know, some of the bigger media companies, Amazon and Google, jumping into the fray. So it's kind of clearing itself a little bit, and you could see the major players.
Henry, this is Rafa. Do you think there was a story today? I'm forgetting which company that raised $125 million for coupons, the old school way, not necessarily sort of the Groupon coupon model. Do you think that after sort of the burn that we're seeing both from consumer side as well as a little bit from the industry as well, that media companies stand a chance of sort of coming back into the game?
I think that media companies will always have a place for distribution. I think that having certainly at Business Insider, we've experimented with daily deals a little bit and we've watched others do it. It is a very difficult business. It's a business that it very much helps to have enormous scale, and it also helps to have consumers in the mood for buying. And Groupon makes an implicit promise to you, and all the companies make a promise to you that when you sign up for the email, you're going to get all these cool deals. Whereas folks going to a media property for news or information or what have you, they're not necessarily in a shopping mood. Groupon has demonstrated just how enormous a sales force you need and how tricky it is to put together a really good deal that works for the merchant and the site as well. So I think it's a harder business than it looks like on the outside. But I think that media companies will always be there for distribution. And as customers get harder and harder to get, I think you'll probably see more and more partnerships between Guild and Groupon and Living Social with media companies, whether it's permanent placements on the site or whether it's different kinds of advertising. I do think there's a way that they can work together.
Just to follow up on what you said about Guild, why do you think that there are similarities between what's happening in the daily deals market versus the flash sales market? I mean, Guild's CEO is your investor as well. Why do you think are those two markets, can they be painted by the same brush?
They're different businesses, there's no question. But I think the market segment that Guild identified really was luxury products and people with a lot of money to spend at the high end of the market. And I certainly would love to hear you guys on this, but I think that what you're seeing in the mass daily deals market is some of the niche players are doing very well. If they focus very closely on a particular industry or a particular location, it can become defensible, whereas it's the big general companies that are getting absolutely crushed. They're right in the middle. So Guild had this very powerful, especially in New York, distribution list of 500,000 email names or what have you, and they immediately cloned that and said, okay, now you're all Guild City members. That gives them a big leg up. And it also is a segment of the market that is used to dealing with Guild. It's a different sales force. They run it as a different company internally, but it has enough similarity that they were able to make the jump, and I think probably will continue to be successful.
So I guess with these specialized players, a new trend that you're seeing with a lot of these sites is that they're focusing more on personalized deals, and you know they'll have a broad array of types of deals. So for instance, they'll have a travel deal, and they'll have a consumer products deal, and they have a local deal. And they're trying to monetize customers better by offering each individual customer different deals in their emails. So Groupon historically has not been doing this well. You know, they're making a more broader and focused push more lately. And you could see this, you know, if you're a new customer, they'll ask you, you know, make you go through this little survey. And Google is doing the same thing. Google doesn't necessarily have the same inventory of deals that Groupon does and the merchant relationships, but that's why Google partnered with over a dozen deal sites that are sourcing their own deals. And the whole idea there is to offer more deals so customers can find something they really like. And that may challenge, you know, some of the more specialized players.
Which is interesting on the travel side, because apparently from somewhere I read that travel is probably the fastest growing category in terms of the deals. And it came in late, but it's ramping up very quickly. I guess Guild's sister company, Jetsetter, was one of the pioneers in that space. Expedia, which I subscribe to their deals. My problem there is that every day they send me a deal saying, oh, hundreds of hotels on sale. But like, I'm only going to book once when I'm going to London. I mean, so like every day becomes a little overwhelming and it doesn't even feel like a deal because it just seems like, okay, they have all these things on sale. They'll probably have it tomorrow as well. But anyway, that's just a comment, not a question really.
It seems like there's just more room for kind of personalizing it and really getting your behavior and figuring out, you know, what is the perfect deal for you at the moment. I mean, the mobile part of it seems like that's really where a lot of this can go, that you're out somewhere and you pull out your mobile phone and you find a deal for something that's close to you, that kind of local part of the solo-mo part, you know, where if you can find something that's local and mobile, you know, that's going to be really powerful.
You know, so 6 months ago, you know, Groupon was pitching their Groupon Now product as the future of the industry. And that's basically, just like you said, a customer goes out for lunch, opens up their Groupon application and says, you know, I want to find a place close to me where there's a deal. We actually did, you know, a bit of analysis on the performance of that product. And, you know, it's not really done well in its first few months. And we believe, you know, a big part of that is that customers just aren't ready for that experience. Groupon's traditional model is basically push, where they're pushing emails to customers and they can check that email, you know, on their own time. With Groupon Now, it's more of a pull experience where customers have to decide, okay, this is the time I need to open up my app, and they're not really conditioned to do that yet. So that's kind of why you see that type of product not really gain traction yet. You know, there's definitely a lot of other complications with the economics of a product like that. But that's something you figure out once you see if the product is actually going to work.
Yeah, Henry, I wanted to ask you also about Nicholas Carlson had this, you know, really in-depth story on Groupon kind of inside with a lot of inside sources. Tell us about that story and just how long it was in the works. And I mean, you guys now have an ebook based on that story. So it's obviously had a huge impact.
Yeah, it was a great story, and I think this is a company that they're like a lot of companies. When you have explosive growth like this, there are lots of different perceptions of what happened. In Groupon case, it's a tremendously controversial company, as I mentioned earlier. I mean, a lot of people are convinced it's just going to go to zero and it's a huge Ponzi scheme. Other people think it's the next Amazon. So anytime you have something that's that controversial and that new, there's an opportunity to really get in. And part of what was so interesting about Nicholas's story is just the way the company was created. It was started as a nonprofit. This was sort of one of the ideas that they had as to way they could maybe fund the company going forward, and suddenly it just took off. And unlike a lot of companies, the moment they saw the spark, they just dumped gasoline, totally went for it. And that's unusual. And in the tech industry in particular, there's always a lot of fighting about whose idea is a particular idea, who thought of it first. What you see over and over again is that, in fact, 10 people have the same idea at the same time, and yet one of them executes better than all the others. And that's what happened with Groupon. I mean, they just completely went for it. And obviously, that's not without friction, and you're not going to hire 10,000 people in 3 years and not make a lot of mistakes and so forth. And so I think that's why Nicholas's story struck a chord, is people really wanted to look inside and see what it was like. And he got a lot of folks to talk to him to tell him about how everything actually went down.
Do you think there is a little bit of a bubble in this area of, you know, kind of the social, local, mobile bubble? I mean, obviously this is a lot different than the dot-com boom, but there are some similarities in that, you know, people getting excited over a stock and then there's a lot of questions as to whether it's really worth what it's worth.
Well, I think from a high level, I think to call what's going on in the public market, in particular with internet stocks now, a bubble, it's almost an insult to actual bubbles. I mean, what happened in the 1990s was just on so many different levels, orders of magnitude beyond what this is. And so people now look at LinkedIn, for the example, and say, oh my God, it's outrageous that it traded to $100 a share. And you can say that, and certainly $100 a share is expensive, and it was obvious that it looked like it was overpriced. But on the other hand, it's a very real, compelling company underneath that. And in Groupon's case, you can fight about whether it's worth $15 billion or $10 billion or maybe $5 billion. I don't hear a lot of people anymore saying it's not worth anything. And it's the same with a lot of other companies that have gone out. Is the truth is that the internet has created just extraordinarily huge opportunities. And you look at the growth of Google and Apple, and you look at the pricing of those stocks relative to the actual fundamentals, you could say they're a little bit expensive, but it is nothing like the $20 billion valuations given to companies that had no fundamentals at all in 1999, and huge pie-in-the-sky expectations for every company and so forth. So tech has always been a cyclical business, always. You go back and through all the different revolutions of computers that have come out, there's always a lot of excitement. What happens is in the beginning, a few companies are very undervalued and people cash in, and then everybody else wants in. And eventually that sector gets overfunded and there's a shakeout. But then some companies come out of that and do very well. And obviously if you look at Amazon and a few other companies from the dot-com phase, they've built extraordinary businesses that are much bigger than people thought were possible back then. So even then it wasn't a complete hallucination. But so I just think that certainly within daily deals, there will be a big shakeout. Most of these companies will fail. You already saw the number three player crater, just because it actually takes a lot of capital. And certainly in social, there's probably too much excitement around that. But that said, you've got Facebook and Twitter and a couple of other companies that are being built that are very real big companies.
And you think Zynga will be the next big one that people are looking for now in this space?
I think there's a lot of excitement around Zynga. I think having looked in detail at the numbers, the big problem with Zynga is for the last three quarters, the company has not grown. It got huge very fast, but it has been flat from the real revenue numbers are what they call bookings. And those have been flat for three quarters. And if Zynga can't prove that they can grow at a compelling rate from here, I think that, in fact, it's going to be tough for people to maintain excitement about the company. It's very exciting, but it's flat now. So I actually am troubled by that, at least based on what we see in the numbers.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you coming on the show.
A great thank you so much for having us.
Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about is the Barnes & Noble. They've announced that they're going to launch next week the Nook tablet, which is kind of their take on, a tablet device that does more than just ebooks. It's going to be $250, and the difference between the Nook tablet and the Kindle Fire is that it's not as tied into Amazon services like the Fire. It also has an expansion slot and supposedly has more battery life to it. What do you think? I mean, is it something you would even consider, or are you just too tied into Amazon to even think about it?
For me, it's the latter, but I mean, it is admirable that I guess Nook is the second largest selling ebook reader outside of Amazon Kindle for such a non-techie company like Barnes & Noble, which has gone through tons and tons of trouble to have been able to push this with a smart smart strategy of design plus using their offline retail presence to do this. It would certainly not move the needle for me because I'm tied into I was never buying books from Barnes & Noble to begin with. It's for me, Amazon is books is part of the large Amazon ecosystem that I'm part of. So I think that's the advantage that Amazon has over and above Barnes & Noble. But I'd be curious to hear what your would it ever sway you to buy or test out Nook?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would consider it. I mean, I'd like to look at all of them. For me, I guess the one advantage to Nook is just not necessarily an advantage, but just, you know, it's good to have more competition. I think it'll help the other players and make them a little bit, you know, try a little bit harder. You know, when Apple just had the iPad and there wasn't really anything competing against it very strongly. You know, there wasn't a lot it had to do to innovate. But now with Kindle Fire and now Nook, you know, you've got a lot more players that are serious, and I think it makes everyone try a little bit harder and do everything a little bit better. I haven't really played around with the Nook that much either. You know, I've been much more Kindle and iPad focused. But I would check it out. I mean, I think I've seen, you know, the HP tablet that came out. You know, I saw that. It looked pretty good. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of tablets in our future, and a lot of different devices. And I think that that's going to be good, just the fact that we've got so many more to look at and choose from. And just the super low end to the, you know, high end, there'll be kind of a variety, I would think.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I think Nook is pushing for is they're saying, look, with Amazon, you're going to be part of their ecosystem. They will not allow third-party services to plug in. They will not allow anything that you buy at other stores or other digital stuff to be part of the Amazon ecosystem, and that's been true in the past. They're going for the open ecosystem thing, which from a conceptual point of view, everybody understands. But I mean, it's not as if that has worked for music players against iPod or iPhone music player. That didn't necessarily work that way. But and there are only very few people in the general consumer market set that care that much about openness versus closed.
Yeah, and I saw something where each one between the Kindle Fire and the Nook tablet are kind of fighting over, you know, who has which apps, you know, which one has different games attached, which one has, you know, allows you to buy different things, and they're obviously reaching out to developers. That's a big battle to be the one who can offer the most things, you know, on their device. There was a survey done that showed that 26% of Kindle Fire buyers either delayed or put on hold a purchase of an iPad. So, you know, even though they kind of don't sell themselves as being an iPad competitor or direct competitor, obviously people are thinking about that, you know, for this holiday season. I mean, last holiday season, you know, they had the iPad. Now, you know, there's a lot more to choose from, and people, you know, now have kind of low-cost options, and maybe they don't need to have as big of a screen, and, you know, they don't need to have the iPad.
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of cheaper price. I think Kindle Fire, as you know, is trying to at least wink at being a competitor to the iPad this at least for the Christmas season. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they already have pre-sold millions of it. So, and
yeah, I think they just said they upped the amount they're making to like 5 million or something.
And I'm going to get it whenever it's launching. It's launching, what, November 15th or something?
Yeah, next week. I think both the Nook tablet and the Kindle Fire will be out next week. So
yeah, so I can do a review on the show probably the week after.
We can side-by-side everything.
Yeah, oh, you should buy the Nook. But you also bought the Kindle Fire, right?
I was planning on getting that. I, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll just end up getting all of them and, you know, having a tablet fest.
We should do that. tablet bake-off. That'd be fun.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Along with my co-host, Rafat Ali, we want to thank our guests, Unaiz Kabani, as well as Henry Blodgett, for joining us for today's show. And we want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Don't forget to check out all the news, polls, and events over at PBS MediaShift at pbs.org/MediaShift and our sister site, IdeaLab, at pbs.org/IdeaLab. We'll catch you next week.